wonderful speaker, Gator Stephen, couldn't be here tonight, so he asked me to fill in for him, and he's given me a couple of things he would have asked me to say about Dublin. Dublin has always shown me what grace and kindness is. He's given me the gift of laughter in my own flaws and buoyed me up when I haven't felt worthy of respect. And I love him deeply for everything he is. And personally, I've gotten to know Dublin a little bit myself through the language of music, and I can affirm that that's really the case. So allow me to introduce Dublin.
Not everybody's a musician here and can and knows all the notes I missed, but anyway, I guess you don't have to be a musician to even know that. But I played that because in July of 2011, I had gone to, I don't know, maybe 8-10 what we call offsites, retreats that we have here. We have them twice a year over a weekend, Friday night. One meeting, three meetings on Saturday, and one meeting on... Can you hear me okay? There, okay. And one meeting on Sunday. And I heard these guys playing music. Amateurs who sound like professionals and professionals. And one of the professionals, I don't think he's here tonight, basically kept encouraging me. I don't think he knew I even played an instrument. It was just a gentle encouragement. Sometimes we just hand out shakers or something to, you know, so people could do anything to play along. And some people would bring their instruments. So in July 2011, I went to a music school in my city where I live. And I said, could you teach me to improvise? I had played as a youngster from fourth grade up through kind of the beginning of college. I was in various orchestras. I never really worked that hard. I already then knew how to blame people. And I got pissed off at my violin teacher for not getting me to practice more. I was preparing for here, wasn't I? Yeah. And so I went back, and she said, sure, I can teach you to do that. So she taught me a few things. You know, you play the root note, and you know, arpeggio is it's kind of what that song begins with. You know, da da da. Anyway, at one of the offsites, this professional musician who regularly played there would call out the chords to me, and I'd learn to do that. If I knew the chord, I could play along, and I could do some improvising. Then it so happened that music school ended up, it was run by a friend of mine, and they started a kind of school of rock. So it was a number, not all of them quite as old as me, but older musicians who were amateurs, and some maybe had played in their lot when they were younger, and we started this kind of rock group thing. And then a few people from that group, one of the woman who did wrote some of the songs, asked me to join her and the guy that played the he actually played guitar, but he played mandolin in our trio, and we started playing together. And I improvised there too. They actually thought I sounded good. When I first came, I think it was the first meeting. It wasn't in this, it was the building before this. So this is some 14, 15 years ago. I remember hearing the do's and don'ts, the do play. And I remember one of the guys talking about him deciding to go dancing. I thought, damn. I mean, that just sounded so cool. I don't know why it hit me. That wasn't the only thing that hit me in that meeting. What also hit me was all these people who talked about all the shit that was going on in their lives. And I swear to God, they looked, sounded much happier than I was. I mean, I had shitlit stuff going, but not major stuff. And I came into the program because I was complaining to a sponsor in another program about having to spend Christmas with my family in San Diego. And he brought me to my first meeting. I played music. I played violin from 4th grade to, 13th grade, I guess. And I stopped for 41 years. So those of you are kind of quickly trying to do the math, I'm not going to tell you how old I am. I'm just going to tell you that when I first saw I Love Lucy, it was not in reruns. Oh, yes, yes, yes. Music means a lot to me. And one of the principles I learned early on in the program, if you spot it, you got it. That's why I have to always be careful about telling anybody who's in a 12-step program something I don't like. Or someone I don't like, unless I just want them to know, that I've got that problem. And I realize that I have easy anger. Oh my gosh, do I have easy anger. I don't know if I'm in the right group or not. Does anybody get upset when you're out driving? Can I see hands? Can you see? Oh, thank you. Oh, I am in the right group. Okay, good. Okay. I have been known to count as I'm walking past stop signs, how many people stop, make a full stop. I've thought of even going out and when they stop, saying thank you so much for stopping. When it had nothing to do, it wasn't like I was crossing the street. I've actually gotten so irritated at someone behind me tailgating me that I took my eyes off of the road ahead and ended up tailgating the person in front of me. Welcome to Al-Anon. But what's more important to me than spotting? I shouldn't say more important. That's not true. No, that's important. I need to spot. I need to realize I've got what I spot in other people that irritate me. But what I also didn't realize was what this said. Maybe I heard it somewhere, but I'm going to read to you from Courage to Change. Who reads this? Anybody read this? Okay. Well, so I'll just mention the page and you'll know, right? 302. So, is that enough? Okay. Jackson. It's amazing how my attitude toward others tends to return to me like a basketball rebounding off a backboard. My impatience with other people often generates even more impatience with myself and my world. When I'm unkind to someone, I get defensive and expect others to be unkind to me. Likewise, when I accept someone unconditionally, I find that my whole world feels safer. So it's in my best interest to treat others as I wish to be treated. I try to imagine that my words and actions are being addressed to myself, because in the long run, I generally get back what I give out. I We're the newcomers. Okay, you listening? What?
Who are you?
Oh, I am Dublin. Did I not introduce myself? Oh my gosh, thank you. Thank you very much. Boy, how you like that? Calling you guys out, you know, and I don't say my name. If I am unhappy with what I receive, I might try looking for the same behavior in myself. It may not take exactly the same form, but I find that whatever I dislike in another is something that I dislike in myself. And now here's the clincher for me. The reverse is also true. What I admire in others probably reflects an admirable quality within me. Now, this is not Al-Anon approved, but I believe everybody wants to do art. That's what I believe. I mean, everybody wants to paint or do music or act. I think everybody wants to do it. And some point in their lives, the ones who aren't doing it were told they weren't good enough. They don't have talent. That's what I believe. And I've seen the evidence of that in a number of my friends and in myself. And that what people need is encouragement. And the basis, what I base that on, is that people go to art. They want to see performances. They want to hear people sing and play instruments. And they want to go to the art museums and look at paintings. And they want to see sculptures and whatever the form is, you know, cooking. I mean, just all this stuff that I believe people want to do. And I think that's what's behind do play, find recreation, and hobbies. That's what I believe. And, all right, I'll go ahead and tell you. I'm retired, so you can, if you're working, you can ignore everything I say if you want. That's all right. I just want to tell you retirement solves nothing. Having more time in general, I think, creates more problems. Now, I think that doing art is a way we love ourselves. That's what I think. And I remember someone saying, well, I know who it is, but I guess I don't need, anyway. It's an author that I read a lot. And what she said was, people who say they're too old just don't want to be beginners. Now, I believe that wholeheartedly. When I took up the violin again in 2011, I wasn't a beginner. But it sure as hell felt like it. The band I played with, they had amps. I didn't. We used to practice all the time. I didn't have an amp. They never could hear my mistakes. I didn't realize it till I wasn't even thinking about it. Now, eventually I got amped and, you know, they could hear. And by that time, I did pretty well. So music, art, playing, recreation, and hobbies. I'm going to read you one other passage from... That passage I just read is my birthday page. I think, yeah, baby. Al-Anon helps us, Al-Anon helps many of us to cope with crises that we simply could not have managed on our own. We learn to lean on a power greater than ourselves, and through the faith and support that surround us, we discover that we can live and even grow through terribly difficult times. For most of us, the situation eventually alters, or we learn to find peace with it. But some of us continue to worry. Some? Yeah. What if crises return? Al-Anon has helped me before, but will it work for me if I need it again? What if some other misfortune comes to pass? Do any of you have this feeling something good is going? You say, oh boy, pretty soon it's going to be. It's going to. Who has that feeling? The shoe's going to drop. Right? Things are going well now, but oh boy. Yeah. Welcome. I cannot know what the future will bring. My best hope is every bit as likely to occur as my worst fear, so I have no reason to give more weight to my negative assumptions. I'm going to read that again because I think that's true. My best hope is every bit as likely to occur as my worst fear. So I have no reason to give more weight to my negative assumptions. Give me some applause if you agree with that. Who says that? Yeah. Talk about egocentric. Give me some applause. Yeah. Anyway. So I last spoke to you, I don't know who was here, in July 2012. Is anybody here? Okay. I had just been forced into retirement. I liked the job I did. I loved the job I did, but I was concerned that I had a modest salary, and I have a modest pension, and I have health care. That's pretty the generous part. And I was told that I might lose that and that I better retire because I might get laid off. And that was in June of 2012, and I came here to talk in July 2012. And I talked that night. I looked at my notes. I know for sure I did. I talked that night about the love in my life that I had not noticed. I want to talk tonight about the love I've learned to give to myself and to people around me. If it's not one thing, it's your mother. Thank you. That's exactly right. I have a friend here who always tells me when I'm going to give a talk. He says, remember, nothing before fourth grade. And if you've been in the program, this is the most recent one. If you've been in the program more than 15 years, you can't talk about your mother. So I said, you know, I think I've been in 14 years, 11 months. I'm pretty sure. I miss my mother. And of all the people in my life, she's the one person I hoped to get out of my life for years and years. Well, get out of my head. My wife, I've told this story before, my wife was standing at our house. We have a patio that's about 3 feet high. And she was standing up there. And she takes care of the plants in the backyard. And she said, could we just not talk about your mother today? I like to exaggerate for humor or other reasons, but I'm not exaggerating. I really didn't realize. I knew I was obsessed, and I knew I said I had no idea it happened that much. And I didn't realize it was bothering her all that much either. Shoot, I'm the one who's got the problem. I don't know what your problem is. You know, it's my mother, you know. But I miss my mother. And for all the things I didn't like about my mother, I have a lot of my mother in me, things that I'm proud of. My mother was a great organizer. Got things together in her, I don't know, 70s or 80s. She had worked out this thing to get people, buy tickets for large groups of people at some senior center, and they would go to Padre games. She organized that. I mean, she complained a lot about, oh, so-and-so can't sit next to you-know-who, and geez, you know. But, or somebody at the last minute, you know, didn't pay or whatever. But she just organized a lot of stuff. She was of service to a lot of people. When I was growing up, I felt other people were more important than we were. Or I felt like I was too important. Because I was pretty much a surrogate husband to her. With the voice in my ear that your dad, you know, is irresponsible. He's not, you know, blah, 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 blah. And I miss my dad, too. I always wanted someone. Okay, I am talking about the people that gave me love, aren't I? I guess I had to do that anyway. So let me get to the love part for me. In February of 1997, Isaiah came to live with us. He's 8 and a half. He came as a foster adopt because his parents had not relinquished, it's Macy, his mother, had not relinquished rights yet. She did eventually. And we adopted him. And he has had a lot of problems. We were visiting him once in Las Vegas. This was about 5 years ago. And we weren't sure what he was doing. We knew he was probably doing some stuff he shouldn't be doing. I'm pretty sure he was selling drugs and among other things. And he made some comment about, you know, I asked him what he's doing. He said, well, I'm I help people to have fun and stuff, you know, like and so what do you mean you help? Well, you know, I mean, people that want to get together and do stuff, I help them find people to do that. I said, you mean you're a pimp? He said, are you kidding? I'm not a pimp. If I were a pimp, I'd be wealthy. Now, the reason I say that, because that says the kind of twisted nature of his thinking. And he was, I hated coming home sometimes when he was still with us. I hated coming home. Didn't know what the latest thing we'd have to deal with. And he finally had to go away. We borrowed money to pay for him to go on a wilderness program in Bend, Oregon. And that made him willing to go to the place he stayed. He went for 2 20-month stays, and that's High Frontier, a couple hours southeast of El Paso in Texas. We found it because it's one of the few places that had both staff and children of color, because Isaiah is African American. We found him at a black adoption festival. Does it just sound weird? So it's like a place you go and you meet up with people and they happen to be kids and you happen to be parent possibilities and maybe you hit it off. So we played Frisbee and it turned out his social worker was a white man, and so they thought maybe there'd be a chance, and he was real cute. Real cute. And we didn't care about having a baby. We had already gone through some of that. We weren't going to have kids on our own. My wife didn't want to go through all in vitro stuff. Yeah, the fertilization things and all that. She didn't particularly want. That was okay with me. It was all right. And we had looked at getting a white baby. And I was so freaked out by the place we went. I mean, it's okay, I understand it. But what you do is you fill out a book with photos and pictures of yourself and your home, and mothers look through it who are getting ready to give birth and pick. You know, so I don't know, it's just something creeped me out about that. Also, all the homes were a lot better than ours. So I figured our chances weren't all that great. But then we heard, LA County, most of the kids in the Children and Family Services are kids of color. And most of the parents are not. And in 1997, the federal law changed, so you couldn't eliminate someone because they were of a different race. You could still encourage it, but you couldn't eliminate them. And so we got Isaiah. And boy, all kinds of shit happened. Near the end, he went away for 20 months because he was just incorrigible. I mean, we couldn't trust anything he said. He would find knives and hide them in his bed. Near the end, we started locking our door because we were afraid of what he would do if he was taking something. It was just horrible. And he took a knife to school. This is sixth or seventh grade. No, I think it was sixth grade. A knife to school after 9/11. Bad timing, huh? When you say, of course, you don't get away with taking a knife to school. We think he did it to, for some show off to some girl. And he would get into fights. All kinds of stuff happened. It was really good from about fourth through sixth grade. He really did well. We thought things were going to be fine. But when teenage yet, he was calling his birth mother. We didn't know that, all that stuff. Now look, I'm saying all that to give you an idea because I want you to understand. How much he's changed. He gets out of prison July of next year. This will be end of a 4-year term. He's at a fairly low security conservation camp in Carson City, 30 to 40 minutes from where my sister lives in Reno. We'll be seeing him Thanksgiving weekend, visiting days or Sundays. Thank you. And I'm going to read to you something that I, in order for me to deal with a lot of the stuff, about 4 or 5 years ago, I just started writing down some of the things I felt about what was going on. And I want to read you something. Dad, I hope that Father's Day goes well for you. I'm sorry that I cannot be there with you, since Father's Day actually needs the son to be there. But that's not happening right now. What I can do is thank you for being there always, being my number one fan. That's the main thing I need in my life. So this day needs to be extra special for the hard work you've done for me. Love your son, Isaiah Tyrone Galyon. We were having some remodeling done, and I was looking through stuff in general. I came across this handmade card. Among other stuff we store for him. Soccer, basketball, baseball trophies. Oh my God, is he an athlete. Holy, I wanted to be him. Well, at least part of him. Baseball trophies, team photos, lists of chores and homework assignments, souvenirs from a YMCA horse camp, and Derek, his blinged up teddy bear. I had not seen any of this for years. By the way, Isaiah has a son. His name is Zion. Baby mama is Anya. They're not married. We just sent Zion Derek with a little note, pretending like we're Derek, saying, you know, there's a lot of things they say about me, and they're not really true, you know, things like that. Because what we would do is we'd use Derek, and we'd blame Derek for things that Isaiah did. You know, it was all kind of a joke in the family. Stenciled on the card's front, Happy Father's Day is hard to read because while the green top half of each letter is clearly visible, the yellow bottom half fades into the brown poster board. The dark ink handwriting is almost as neat as the font I used to copy it, a beautiful cursive matching the beautiful sentiments. There's no date on it, but I assume it was sent from the High Frontier. That's the therapeutic boarding school he went to. Well, I say it here, in Fort Davis, Texas. Fort Davis, Texas. Davis. Any idea what Davis we're talking about?
Of course.
Jefferson Davis.
Of course.
Our black son is going to a place that's named after a Confederate general. Oh, the ironies in life. There is no date on it. Oh, I said that. He lived there during most of his teens over 4 Father's Days, from 2001 to 2005, except for a 9-month break at home. I had forgotten. Not just the content. I don't remember ever getting the card or any other card. I know he remembered one Mother's Day, but not with anything written. He called my wife, his adopted mother, a bitch. But even if there had not been others, how could I not remember this one? When I first received it, did I just dismiss the sentiments as another attempt to manipulate a skill that he had helped him survive his past horrors? His mother had 2 kids, then him and 2 more. He's the only one that wasn't kept. She was taken away from him at birth because she tested positive for cocaine. She didn't fight for him, at least what she said is so that he because she's afraid she'd lose the other two. Or did I so want him to feel this way that I decided it was too good to be true? But here's what kills me. Could he have left out the comma between love and your on purpose? Did you notice that the way I read it? Love your son, Isaiah, not love your son, Isaiah. Conscious or not is the main point how much he wants my love, and that I didn't notice that among his defiance and indifference. But even worse, might he have been giving me all the love he could muster, but I never noticed. Was I so scared, angry, disappointed, exhausted, naive, and blind during those turbulent years that I don't even have the facts straight, ones that would change both my view of our troubled son, but also of himself? And now, quote and comment, quote from the card and my comment. My number one fan. I went out of my way to encourage him. Did that really get through? The hard work you've done for me. Did staff at High Frontier give him these words, or did he actually notice? Love your son. Is this a demand from someone who felt my love and wanted more? Or did he see how far I fell short and wanted me to get with it? I began writing this to confess my failings. I'm finishing it to discover what happened. I've written a lot more, and he's read all of it. I've asked him if he would be interested in writing something himself, and he said yes. So I'm in the process of sending him everything that I've written. All right, it's a book, but anyway, I'm sending him all this stuff, and he's going to make notes, and he's going to write stuff. He said, I was hurt by some of the stuff in there. I don't feel bad about that. Because it's the truth of what went on. It was really hard living with him. Really hard. But things are different. Two more Father's Day cards, much more recent. Thank you for all that you have and continue to do, not just for me, but those around you. You are a great ball of energy still, Dad. Ha ha. Now that I understand it, it is truly a blessing to know that I don't just have a friend, but a parent. I am looking forward to getting out of here, prison, and making you and Mom proud. Love your son. Again, no comma. Isaiah Galyon. P.S. Sorry, it's not on time. So this one is, when you're in prison, you can buy stuff as long as people put money on your account. And it's a horrible ripoff. If there's anybody here who works in the justice system and feels differently, then I'm sorry. Maybe it's not for you or what you're doing, but... Oh, it's hard to believe the stuff that happens, aside from the number of percentage of African Americans and Latinos who are in prison. But anyway, so you get these cards, you know, that he has only certain ones he can buy. Happy Father's Day. May Father's Day be so happy that it's one you will recall as being your very best of all. You've always been a person who's as special as can be, and anyone knows you will most certainly agree. Please add these warm wishes to all of the rest, because you are thought of as simply the best. Now, I write, I read a lot, and mostly I hate cards like this. But I don't know. It was cute. I just got a kick out of it. But of course, what I most want to hear is what he has to say, and I'll read that to you. I apologize that this is getting to you so late, but it is important to me that I do let you know that I thank you and love you for all that you have and continue to do for me. From Kumon, Anybody ever heard of Kumon? Oh my God, I mean, I know because of my profession, that is such a good program. And if anybody know of kids who are having trouble in school, you come up afterwards and talk to me about Kumon, and I'll tell you. From Kumon to how you're there helping Zion, Anya, and myself. I know it has been a long road and haven't always shown my love and appreciation. But through your unconditional love, tough love, I have learned what love is myself. There is much I still need to work on. I do realize, but knowing I have a dad like you who has my back makes it much easier to continue this transformation that I'm going through. Thank you for everything. Love your son. Still no comment. So there's spiritual wisdom that says it doesn't mean much if you love those who love you. You may have had it in your religious traditions. The telltale sign is to love someone that doesn't love you. In fact, even to love someone who hates you. And I would say the telltale sign for me is also that. And a lot of the times I hated Isaiah. We were told later on that older kids coming into families usually have so many. By the way, I don't know how true this is. We're told that in the foster care system, majority of the kids are sexually abused. The foster care system is broken, even if that's not true. It's terribly broken. And you know why it exists? It exists because people said orphanages are not a good idea. And I'm not denying that. I suppose they're not. Unless you have a lot of really wonderful workers there, maybe it's better. I don't think there's many people who do foster care for the money. There may be. It's really too hard work to do just for the money, in my view. But oh my God. And the worst thing that happens to kids is they're moved from place to place. That's the worst thing. I've written later on in this, you know, that my wife and I moved a lot when we were young. Both of our fathers were in the service, moved a lot. And I think I was in five or six schools, you know, by the time I graduated, by the time I left elementary school. Suzanne's the same way, you know, just a lot. And that's disruptive, you know. Anybody had to move a lot when you were very young? I didn't know until, where's Juan? Oh, maybe he left. Anyway, one of the guys in here, when I was talking about my mother dying, you know, told me about a grief group, and it helped enormously. If anybody knows someone who's having trouble with grief or needs help, talk to me about that afterwards too. This is wonderful. Anyway, it's a grief recovery handbook, and I don't know, I lost my train of thought. Moving, thank you. Yes. And so I didn't realize that moving was something to grieve over. I didn't realize it was a loss. In fact, these guys define loss as any change. Not just a change for the worse. Any change has to be dealt with as a loss. Ooh. I bet there's a lot of loss in this room here. I'll bet. So Suzanne and I moved a lot. But we moved with our families. Yeah, we left friends behind. Yeah, it was hard getting close to people because of that. We moved with our families. Isaiah moved without his family, not having a family. Isaiah taught me how to love. And that love I have for him is not just because of what he's saying now. I mean, this is wonderful. I joke around with him a lot, and I say, you know, someone sent me a Father's Day card. I don't know who it was. You know, you can't believe all the nice things they said. And we laugh a lot. We laugh on the phone. We talk to him more now in prison than we did when he was out. Because he calls regularly. Well, because we pay for him to call. I mean, so I guess to call, but you know, I watched my wife deal with Isaiah. So you probably heard me say this before, but my idea of my perverted idea of parenting was Isaiah. We had a bedroom with separated by a short hall, or connected by a short hall. And in the door to our bedroom, Isaiah said, "Fuck you." And I'm walking after him. And my wife is behind me saying, "Just let him go, let him go. What are you talking? You hear what he said? He said, fuck you." I'm going in there. Now, I was able to tell Isaiah later on that I apologized to him for that. I didn't apologize for him saying, fuck you. I apologized for getting down to his level. I should have been the adult in that situation and let it go. Oh, my wife said she'd never seen me so angry. She saw me with Isaiah. But you know, my wife and my wife is the one saying, come on, let it go, let it go. We joke in our family, I'm the giddy up and she's the whoa. And that applies to almost everything. But she, you know, I learned from her. You need two people like that in a family dealing with someone like Isaiah. I learned to love here in this room. And I'm capable of loving people. When I was here 7 years ago, I talked a lot about my sponsor who would end every conversation on the phone with, "Love you, Dublin." And after I'd been with him for a while, I said, you know what? That makes me uncomfortable. So I'm going to tell him. You know, I've been in the program for a while. I stand up for myself. I set boundaries, even with a sponsor. So the next time he called me, he said, you know, that really makes me feel uncomfortable. I mean, I just don't appreciate it. I know there's some reasons for it from my background and my family, but I just don't appreciate that. Okay? Love you, Dublin. Then he hung up. This is a program for people who already know how to love and want to learn to expand who they love. The irritating person at work, the irritating person at home, wherever it is. This is a program of people who never felt like they were loved. And in that closing that you're going to hear, you may not like all of us, but you love us in a special way. The same way we already love you. How can we say that when we don't know you? Because we have love in us. And it spills out onto you. You're welcome. And thank you.
Thank you, Dublin. Let's all thank Dublin one more time. Yay! Gordon, would you please come up and read the closing?